Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Pure Football Podcast. I'm your host this evening, Owen Brown, and with me is Gavin Miller. Gavin, how are you?
Angry.
Good angry. Stuff. Oh, I thought you said I'm great. I was so, you know how these things are so kind of done by rote. Everybody says they're well at the start of a podcast. You're angry. What's the reason for your anger?
I'm going to say the Scotland squad, and it's something really simple that I'm sure we'll get to in a minute.
Okay, well, that is a key part of our running order. We're going to kick things off tonight by talking about Scotland. After that, we're going to have a look at Kilmarnock, and then we're going to do some match analysis looking at Ross County versus St Johnstone, Raith Rovers versus Falkirk, and Cowdenbeath versus Edinburgh City. It's been a pretty busy weekend of football in the SPFL tiers. So Celtic lost, Rangers went to the top of the Scottish Premiership. Slightly down the footballing pyramid, I went along to see my local junior team, Maryhill FC. They got their left back red carded after 10 minutes, also conceded a penalty at the same time. So went down 1-0, decided not to play with a left back for the next 80 minutes in a kind of weird three at the back formation with just ignoring the hole at left back. Went on to lose 4-1, and then the manager got sacked straight after the match. A little bit more exciting and interesting than Newcastle United versus Manchester United, if you happen to see that. But a little example of kind of football and misery close to home. And I guess keeping in that spirit, we've just had the announcement that one of our few remaining forwards, Ollie McBurney, has dropped out of the Scotland squad for Russia and San Marino and has been replaced by Stuart Armstrong. So it's not as if we're exactly replenishing in terms of up front. So these are the games this week. Thursday night versus Russia, Sunday evening against San Marino. They are our kind of last two of our last four qualifying games in this group, which has basically been a write-off by the point we've come to these matches. However, we're still going to have a look at them and see what we think our lineup should be for both games. Before we look at that, Gavin, I just had a little kind of trivia question for you. Who do you think at the moment is the top scorer in this qualifying phase? I mean, of all the UEFA European, all the groups for the Euro 2020 qualification.
For Scotland or?
No. So the top scorer has more goals than Scotland has. I mean, the individual player. Who leads the rank in terms of scoring, do you think?
I'm going to guess Harry Kane.
Okay. It's not him. It's a guy called Aaron Zahavi, who is a 32-year-old that plays for Israel. His club team is Guangzhou in China. He scored 84 goals in 93 games in the Chinese league. He scored 9 goals in this qualifying so far for Israel. Scotland have only scored 5 goals. Our opponents on Thursday night have scored 18. They managed to beat our Sunday night opponent, San Marino, 9-0 in their matchup in Russia back in summer. However, in their last games out, Russia only beat Kazakhstan 1-0 at home with an 89th minute goal. And they, in fact, only beat Cyprus 1-0 at home as well. So, there's possibly a chance that we can take something.
I like how you say they only beat Kazakhstan 1-0 when Kazakhstan beat us 4-0. But
okay, 3-0, but that was away from
home. Sorry.
And, time's passed since then. We've got Steve Clark in and so on. So what's the team that's going to do it for us, Gavin? How are we going to get something against Russia and then surely 9 goals against San Marino? What are the lineups you've got for me? What are your thoughts about the situation? Tell me a little bit about that anger that you're feeling.
So first of all, my anger comes from to get it off my chest. Why don't we use the full quota of players we can when someone drops out? I don't get why would you not maximise that and have more people around about the international setup. And I won't mention he who shall not be named. But there's certainly, someone like Tom Kearney or Barry Bannon, Lewis Morgan. I don't particularly care too much about who it is. Just if it's someone that could offer something to us at an international level and is a good enough quality, then why aren't we?
Do you think they're saying no?
I hope not.
I would imagine if somebody like Tom Kearney is asked at this point to be a call-up to replace an injury dropout, he's probably going to say no. That's my feeling on that. I mean, I'm sure there are other people that would obviously say yes. I'm available. But you know, but yeah, that's my feeling, that maybe there's a little bit of that. I mean, I certainly thought that when Clark took over from McLeish, that sort of thing would reduce in occurrence. But I mean, I would imagine there's a possibility of that. But I totally agree with what you're saying, that why aren't we calling up a direct number of replacements and positional replacements as well.
Absolutely,
so Burnie's dropped out, and I know that we're already scratching around in the second tier for a centre forward, but you know, there are other options. There are other people that we could potentially have called up as an alternative up front. It seems a wee bit weird, but carry on. Give me more of your anger. Talk to me about what you're feeling.
Yeah, I just feel like there's no sort of strategy towards the call-ups. It doesn't seem to make a whole load of sense. Again, we called up Grant Hanley, who has not played in 6 weeks through injury for Norwich. Why was he even in the squad? What's the logic there?
The same thing happened with Naismith as well. Yeah. The last thing where he was called up and he was clearly injured, clearly wasn't going to be able to contribute, and he was still injured after the international matches. So that seems a wee bit strange to me, doesn't it? But sorry, carry on. I'm interrupting you again.
No, it's okay. So I guess it is the exact same thing though, right? Like when we could call up players that are either playing regularly or players that are at least know the international setup but are fit. You know, that's a basic thing, right? I think, again, going back to Tom Kearney, like, what about if, rather than calling up an injured Stephen Naismith, who we knew wasn't going to be part of the game, we call up someone like Tom Kearney, who was playing regularly and was playing well for Fulham?
Absolutely.
Or, you know, I guess in this case, I think I spoke to you about when Hanley dropped out, why haven't we called up... Hanley was called up, I said, why are we not calling up Declan Gallagher? He eventually did get the call, but I guess the bad part is that Declan Gallagher and Stuart Finlay and Mikey Devlin, that doesn't fill you with confidence going into these games. But it's more just the fact of like, what is the actual strategy with this team? It just feels so disjointed still. And like you, I think I thought Clark was going to be the clean slate, but we've just not quite seen it yet.
Matt, I wonder how that makes players feel as well. I mean, obviously, everybody's delighted to have international recognition, and I'm sure you're very thankful and into it and so on. But international football is not really the be-all and the end-all anymore for players, I don't think. How do you think it feels if you're, you know, excluded from the squad in place of somebody who is actually already really injured, and you only get a call-up as and when they actually drop out? I must feel a bit weird. I don't know. I'm just... maybe I'm reading a wee bit too into much into how I would think about that, but I think, you know, how much faith does a manager have when he wants to have somebody that's injured before you?
Yeah, totally. it just doesn't make sense to me. I'm really not getting it. Matt Phillips has dropped out of the current selection pool as well. I thought he was actually one of the better players against Belgium. I thought he worked really hard and done pretty well holding the ball up when he had it. So for him to not be in the squad, I think there's been some reports that he's having a minor operation during the international break. But I think the game against Russia, you know, you could easily have negotiated that with West Brom or the player to say, you know what, let's be available for that game. And if we don't qualify from that, then that's fine. Or we don't get a result from that, sorry. Then after that, you can go and get your operation and, you know, take it from there. I just feel like it just doesn't feel right still, and I'm just not sure what it is that's going on behind the scenes. So,
okay. I don't disagree with that at all. I guess as well as the centre-back kind of issue you pointed to, which has been a kind of long-ish term worry, I think now with McBurnie dropping out as well, we literally only have really Shankland in the squad that's a recognised centre forward. There's obviously Ollie Burke, but you know, if he can maybe ring in the podcast and tell us what his actual position is, then you know,
does he know how to use a phone?
There's a little bit of a real kind of problem up front. It's been a long time problem, but when you don't even have, you know, options at all, let alone people who are maybe not particularly delivering, it's a concern.
Can I position a question to you very quickly? Sure. Would you have called up Lyndon Dykes when he said he was available, and now that McBurnie is out?
I guess it would be an option. I don't know. Maybe we did try and get him and he said no. Maybe he's, you know, hanging on for Australia. I mean, he was quite clear in his kind of post-match interview yesterday that probably Australia is his preference. I had a little look at their squad, and I think that if he carries on in good form and doing good things, I think there is a hole for them up front as well. There's not necessarily somebody that seemed to me to be the outstanding choice. So, you know, that might be his, you know, it's a difficult thing to, you know, international allegiance and so on. But yeah, maybe we could make a play for him. I'm not certain that he would be a goal scoring answer for Scotland, but, you know, an option, you know, certainly somebody that you and I respect the qualities he brings and so on. So yeah, could have been somebody to look at. Let's see where we are then, right? So tell me who you would select as your starting lineup versus Russia, if you want to give me any thinking as to why you're going with that lineup and so on, go for it.
Yep. So I'm going to go for Marshall and goals. I think he's sort of earned that spot hands down. I'm going to go for a back four of Andy Robertson and Stephen O'Donnell at the fullback positions, just from a bit of continuity. And I'm not too sure about what Liam Palmer actually offers at fullback. Centre-back, I'm actually going to throw Declan Gallagher in, and I'm going to partner him with Charlie McGrew. My thinking behind bringing Gallagher in is I think he actually offers quite a lot from set pieces, opposed to Stuart Finlay. So I think that's something that we maybe want to try and capitalise on, both defensively and offensively. So yeah, that was my thinking from a back four. I don't like Charlie Mulgrew playing, but like you mentioned, we don't particularly have a lot of options unless we just decide to scrap the centre-back position, the right-back position as well.
Maryhill FC style, yeah. Just don't play with a certain position.
Yeah, yeah. It's the reverse Maryhill. Then I would have McTominay screening the back four. I think he actually done okay. I'm not a big fan of him in general, to be honest, but I think he done okay in the last games. And I'm going to stick with the McGinn and McGregor in front of them. I'm not too sure if it's a bit of they're not used to the system or what they're being asked to do, but I think that there is potential for that to work. If you ask McGregor to be the player more available for the pass and McGinn to give you the energy going box to box, that might work. And I think McGregor's smart enough to be able to, you know, be that playmaker for us, which I think is really important just now. I think he's someone that, you know, he's played a lot of football recently, right, in the last 12 months. And I do think he is suffering a bit of a burnout. But I think he's someone that we should probably be building our team about. I'm going to have three ahead of them with Ryan Fraser, James Forrest, and Ryan Christie in a false nine sort of position. I think the interchange between those three could work quite well. Sure. I also think that the McGregor, Christie, and Forrest connection in this game will be really important. And I think there is still that element of Celtic connection that can really help us in that attack in third. So that would be my lineup for the game.
I like it. I like it so much that I happen to pick the exact same lineup as you, which is obviously not good for debating this. But hey, I think we feel quite similarly about most of these things. You're right to point out the fact that Declan Gallagher is a threat at set pieces. I think I have big concerns about Mulgrew as well, particularly playing against Russia, because I think you'd want to play quite a high line against Dzubia, given, you know, he's a kind of big immobile tank that just wants to get in the box and be a magnet to the ball. So you want to be able to be quite high, and Mulgrew obviously is 33 and not really a pacey guy, so that's a bit of a risk. Dzubia has already scored 6 group goals, which is more than what Scotland have scored. So we need to, again, be very mindful of the risk to him. I think the other thing that we also have to do is make sure that we get out quickly to the fullbacks to block those kind of diagonal balls that they like to play into, which is why I think Fraser and Forrest will be quite important. And also if Christie can participate in that and be quite a kind of mobile, aggressive presence against the back line. The midfield, again, I've selected the three same players as you. I think yeah, we're maybe damned a little bit in that area by having quite a lot of quality, quite a lot of players that are pretty reasonable for us, but maybe just not the kind of functional roles that we really need. There's maybe not that kind of defensive midfielder that we would really benefit from. I think perhaps there was maybe a feeling that McTominay would be that kind of role, but it's not necessarily the way he's playing for Manchester United at the moment. He's playing maybe a little bit more equivalent to even what we would want McGinn to be doing, that kind of right-sided central midfield sort of shuffler role. And yeah, not really sure that McTominay's the kind of battling, kind of anchoring presence we'd want in there. But let's see, let's try it, I guess. So yeah, I'm kind of with you on the same team, but also is a little bit of a lack of options, which is leading us both to that too. However, let's go with it. Let's be positive about that for Thursday night's game. What about Sunday's game at home against San Marino, a team that have conceded 28 goals and scored zero in their six losing matches so far? What's your 11, Scots, to play against them?
So I'm going to make some changes. I think we should absolutely have enough to get by these. So I'm going to actually give Craig McGilvery a chance in goal. So he's the youngest goalkeeper in the squad. I don't know a whole lot about him, but I feel like we would want to test him out, right? And that's probably a good game to do it.
Yep.
I'm going to then move Stuart Finlay in for Charlie McGrew. Again, he's the youngest centre-back in the squad, so mm-hmm. I would think he's going to be about for the next qualifying campaign. So we may as well play him. I'm absolutely not giving any minutes to Mikey Devlin because he shouldn't be in the squad. and I'm maybe going to bring Greg Taylor in for Robertson as well. Just young player, not played a lot of football. I think it's a good game to ease him back in.
So that would be Celtic's job for him, basically. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
I think
as well, Robertson's played a whole load of football as well again. Sure. So it'd be more just to give him a break in the midfield. I'm going to give John Fleck his debut. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take him in for McTominay, and I'm going to put him beside John McGinn. Drop Cal McGregor for the same reason that he's played a whole load of football, and bring in Kenny McLean as the attacking midfielder. Probably drop James Forrest, bring in Ollie Burke, and I'm going to drop Ryan Christie, and I am going to give Lawrence Shankland his debut.
Okay, cool. Right. So I've done some similar things to you. I also went with McGilvery in goal against San Marino. I think I had a look at him on StatsBomb, like when he was in a previous squad, and I admittedly hadn't even heard of the guy, and he looked pretty reasonable. And why not? McLaughlin doesn't appear to be in the best of form for Sunderland, so let's go there. I've decided I would give Palmer a shot at right back against San Marino just to see how he gets on. I'm also going to go with Finlay and Gallagher as the centre back pairing. See how they do together. I want to, if possible, keep Robertson in. I do get where you're coming from with Taylor, but I just think that the competition for Robertson's going to be there for Tierney. If Taylor plays a really good game, I'm not entirely sure what that really does for us. I'd like to see Robertson really kick on, show his kind of leadership credentials against a team that we should be hammering. And also, he should get an opportunity to get forward a bit more in attack space and stuff. So should be his natural game. So yeah, in the midfield as well, rang a few changes, kept McTominay in as maybe a kind of bit of a sitting midfielder, should get a bit more space in this. I think, he's reasonable on the ball, decent, passing. So want to see him doing a bit of that as well. And I brought in Fleck, same as you. I think he's somebody that merits a chance, hearing reasonably good things about how he's doing in the Premier League for Sheffield United. And I think he would maybe bring something a bit different to the team, which I'd like to see. Ahead of him, I have gone for Snodgrass, Christie and Fraser. I think Snodgrass I want to have in for set-piece threat, basically. I think we should be hopefully getting quite a lot of corners, maybe free kicks around the box and stuff against this team. We've got Gallagher in the team. We've got McTominay, who's a wee bit of height. Snodgrass has got a reasonable delivery. Christie hopefully gives a goal threat. There should be plenty of chances to shoot from distance. Similarly for Snodgrass as well, reasonable distance shot. And Fraser, I think it would be good for Fraser to play maybe a game for Scotland where there's a bit of an opportunity to be a bit of a hero. Things have maybe dipped a wee bit for the national team for him lately, so chance for him to take things to the opposition and maybe get a few assists. And who else is he going to be laying those assists on for but Lauren Shankland, who also will be starting this game for me, same as you, up front. And hammering home so many goals that we completely forget about Lee Griffiths or whoever else that we wish would be back in a Scotland shirt.
They'll be calling Erhan Zahavi the Israeli Lauren Shankland.
Absolutely, if they're not already, the teams in China will be throwing money at Dundee United as well. So that's our lineups for the Scotland game. If you're listening in, please, you know, at us on Twitter at a Pure Football account, tell us who you would start for both matches. Really, really keen to hear what you guys think. The following games after that are the 16th of November away to Cyprus, and then the 19th of November at home to Kazakhstan, and then we can sort of forget all about this pretty bad group experience and go on to the Nations League qualifiers. In terms of other Scotland stuff to look out for this week, well, there's under-19 and under-21 matches, as we spoke about on last week's podcast. I believe that the BBC sports website is going to be streaming those games. The key one, perhaps, to look out for is this Thursday at 5:15, when the under-21s are playing from Tynecastle. If you can't on the game, then it sounds like there'll be a way to watch it. Only other kind of news in that kind of area is it sounds like, as we maybe touched on in the podcast, I feel it might happen. Aaron Hickey is probably out of the under-19s squad. I think we kind of touched on maybe he'd want to ensure that he's not facing any sort of burnout. He's had a lot of minutes for Hearts, a team that have had a lot of injuries. So I think he's maybe kind of come to that decision after listening to the show. And Aaron, look after yourself. So from the current Steve Clark team to the former Steve Clark team, we're going to have a little look at Kilmarnock just now. It's dangerous, I think, to kind of maybe focus purely on the things that you've got right and kind of, you know, crow about them. It's a long season. Things can change. It's also only right when, you know, you do perhaps get some things wrong to kind of talk about those things too. But I guess, I mean, it is fair to say, Gavin, that from the very outset, you were very keen that, you know, everybody got behind Angelo Alessio and supported him and kind of understood that there was a process to go through for Kilmarnock, and he had plans and things might start to work out. And it certainly looks as though that's happening. So, I mean, they lost their first two Premiership games, although I felt they were a little bit unlucky to do so against Hamilton Accies. They, of course, had the defeat in the Europa League to Nomads. But since that, in their six Premiership games, they've only had one defeat, which was against Celtic. They've had three wins and two draws, and they beat Hearts away at the weekend. And I think even more impressively, apart from just the results, in those six games, they've only conceded to Celtic three goals in that game, but they were all conceded in a 15-minute period. So they're now seventh in the table on 11 points after eight games. They're 7 points away from bottom. They're only 1 point away from fourth place. So things are looking on the up for Kilmarnock and Angelo Alessio. How do you feel about this? What are your thoughts on how things have gone for them?
I'm delighted that things are starting to work out for them. I think that it was always going to take time, and people were far too naive to the mess that Kilmarnock were in when he picked it up, right? The state of the squad, I think if you go back to a pod that we done just at the sort of end of the last season, sort of June time, we mentioned that, you know, the amount of players that they were losing from loans, contract expiring, etc. It was an absolute shambles of a squad. Alessio was coming in. They also lost some key backroom staff. And then just people were far too caught up in the Nomads result, which was bad, right? Let's not beat around the bush. It was bad. But there was a bit of a hate campaign against Alessio specifically, because he was written off after one game that he couldn't do it. And the guy's got some incredible credentials on his CV, right? So he's coached the Italy national team. He's coached with Chelsea. He's coached at Inter Milan. At Juventus. You know, so to be naive enough to think that after one game that he wasn't going to do well is just silly. And I think that it's just, it's actually, I'm still a little bit disappointed that not enough sort of people have came out and said, you know what, maybe actually that we got this one a little bit wrong, or maybe actually they are turning the corner, because I've yet to really see that. But maybe that's me being a little bit bitter.
Those articles might come out in international break. You know, there's a lack of kind of hot news during that time. So maybe that might be a wee opportunity for the likes of Gordon Parks to reflect think. It was interesting to me when you mentioned there about the kind of the squad issues that we'd kind of talked about towards the end of last season, and how that might rear its head in the summer, even if Clark was still there. I want firstly to thank one of our listeners, Nick Livingston, who pointed out on Twitter this evening that I should go and listen and watch an interview with Billy Bowie that he did on Killy TV. So I watched that this evening, and that was really illuminating. It's about a 20-minute interview. It's free. You know, you don't have to have Killy TV to see it. I would recommend watching it. He spoke quite a lot about, I mean, the kind of takeaways that I took from it in part were that the club really want to be prepared for the future. So they want to be kind of forward thinking, but be ahead of the game, so that they don't kind of end up in a situation of the sort that they were in again. And I don't think they mean by that just the situation of Steve Clark leaving. I think they mean all sorts of things that can happen as a football club. So he pointed to the fact that, you know, if you have a lot of loan players, then, you know, potentially you can be in a bit of a hole if you maybe have summer football in Europa League and things like that, where things are uncertain. So they're currently looking to recruit a football operations chief, basically. And he gave quite a lot of detail about what that sort of role might entail. So, you know, just kind of around the recruitment side of things, around looking at setting up a pathway from youth football to the first team. They want to have a quality reserve team, so that if they do maybe have loanees that leave, they have people that can actually step up and contribute. I think they want to have a better, more extensive scouting process and be able to identify players of the sort of quality level that they feel they're at just now. And beyond that, they seem to be doing quite a lot of other positive things. So trying to improve the fan experience, they're bringing in safe standing. They've got a new pitch. They've got a new kind of ticketing system that's paperless. All these kind of things they're trying to be forward thinking and trying to kind of take this as an opportunity to move on. And that got me thinking about the kind of situation we're in at the moment in the league. So there was some kind of buzz on Twitter with some opinions about Rangers and Celtic back being kind of at the top of the table, and the kind of big gap potentially between them and the other teams in the league and so on. And I was thinking about how there's a real opportunity perhaps this season for a team that does want to position themselves as maybe a third team or a fourth team in Scotland, to kind of cement that for the next couple of years with Hearts and Hibs and even maybe Aberdeen to an extent, in a little bit of a situation where there's uncertainty about their manager and there's maybe issues with recruitment and so on. Maybe there's a chance for Kilmarnock to kind of stamp a bit of a philosophy and have consistency and set out that kind of stall so that they can move forward for the next years. And even if, for instance, let's say Alessio does make a success of things and he goes on to a higher level in terms of management, they now have a kind of approach and so on. So it can be quite a positive situation for them, I think. But the one thing also that I wanted to ask you about that interview that I watched, in the interview, Billy Bowie talks about how busy the summer was, and part of the busy thing was having this list of applicants for the replacement managerial position. He said that they had about 60 applicants that came into them without them even having to ask for the job, and he said, you know, they were very high quality. I was quite impressed with how many people they actually shortlisted, and not only shortlisted but interviewed in quite a lengthy kind of process. How many people, how many managers do you think they interviewed for this role?
I'm going to say 8.
11, which I thought was pretty good. He said it was a couple of hours really finding out about their experience. He seemed to be somebody who really values people that have experience and that have maybe learned from their experience. So I think he'll maybe take away quite a lot from the failures in the Europa League and the fact that they were kind of new to that and they weren't prepared for some of the just the level of detail and logistics around being in Europa League. So it all felt to me like they're using this summer and this experience to kind of move forward and learn from experience and build on it. It was really quite encouraging. So beyond that, any kind of takes you've got about how they're playing, about their results, anything you wanted to kind of talk about in terms of Kilmarnock at all?
Yeah, there's something. So I watched a couple of highlights and the one thing that really stands out to me is, you know, they have been lucky on a couple of occasions. I won't deny that. Hearts probably should have scored at least two really good chances that they just fluffed. But it looks like Kilmarnock are actually closing down the ball a little bit quicker compared to last year, where they were maybe holding their shape a bit more.
I've got some stats in relation to that that are quite interesting. So in the league, Kilmarnock make the most pressure regains per match in the league. So that's ones where they reclaim the ball after it's kind of just recently been turned over. They also make the third most counter pressures, and they make the second most aggressive actions in the league. I think they're still allowing quite a lot of passes to happen. They still don't necessarily want the ball. You know, I think they're down at like 45% possession in games. And they're, still compact and stuff. But I think you're right in terms of your takeaway that there's some aggression and some kind of, wanting to, press the ball and win it back where possible. What else have you seen?
Yeah, just on that point specifically just now about, I think you'll see that in the next sort of maybe two windows that Kilmarnock will probably move away from the Gary Dicker, Alan Power type midfield, because I think that's part of their issue with teams still getting opportunities, because I don't think they're quite mobile enough.
Okay.
I'm sure that will probably upset some Kilmarnock fans hearing that, but I think that's maybe...
Well, I think if you go back and watch the Nomads game, then that was certainly an issue. Like, people like that being drawn into the channels. Broadfoot's gone, who's an issue in that kind of area. But, I think that's a fair take. Bowie was very clear about the fact that they're already essentially planning their January window and beyond that they want to be kind of, two steps ahead in terms of identifying what they have to replace. Yeah. What else were you thinking?
Yeah, I think that the other thing I've noticed is that in terms of the wider areas, it looks like they've tried to add a bit more pace. I think Hamalainen looks quite quick. Mm-hmm. And I think that they're going to have to address that on the right side, because Burke and O'Donnell don't maybe have that explosiveness that maybe Miller and Hamalainen do in terms of getting forward when Kilmarnock win the ball quickly. Mm. So I think that's an area where they could improve upon. And for me, they're still lacking a proper goal scorer. As much as I like Brophy's raw talent, it's exactly that. It's too raw right now. I think
is it fair for us still to accept that as raw talent? I mean, at what point do we maybe expect a bit more from Brophy?
Yeah, I guess you're right. I think that he's definitely coming to the end of that period of being classed as raw, where he'll maybe move into someone that just makes poor decisions on a regular basis. He needs to learn when to shoot, when not to shoot, when to go, when not to go. I feel like that's a big sort of downfall in his game. He maybe doesn't have a sort of football IQ that you would maybe look for. But yeah, it's definitely... There's still signs there that there's something you can work with, but I think he really needs to improve pretty quickly.
Sure. I kind of agree with that. I mean, I think he's, 24 next March? So I think you'd be looking for the kind of potential to realise itself around now. In terms of positives, I really liked what you said there about the players. I think maybe the key for Kilmarnock is still the fact that they've managed, even with losing people like Broadfoot and Taylor, they've got essentially a settled back eight. So the goalkeeper, yep, Brunescu, who's now got five clean sheets in eight games, replacing Bachmann, who we were really impressed with last season. So that's brilliant that they've managed to find somebody who still seems to be really, really good at that level. And then the back four with, as you said, Hamalainen and the other three, Del Fabbro and Finlay and O'Donnell there as well, and then the midfield three with I think El McCreaney. Wasn't too convinced about him initially. I was kind of felt there was some mobility issues, but it looks to me like he can kind of win the ball back really well and can actually carry it forward pretty reasonably too. Yeah. Really quite impressive that the back eight have performed well, and they seem to have. There were some early issues for me. The Hamilton game, I felt there were some mistakes by Finlay in particular, that were kind of concerning, but they seem to have ironed out those kind of issues. I mean, you did point out the fact that there was the potential for some goals for Hearts and so on, but I think they've done great. Like you say, though, there's still that issue in terms of up front. It sounds from the interview with Bowie that there were some real frustrations during the transfer window in the summer, that they thought they had some things done, but then on the last day of the window, things maybe fell apart. I would imagine that was probably up front. You know, I think they ended up getting Osman Sow on the last day of the window, and maybe there were some other people they'd looked at. I'm not, you know, I'm sure they'll kind of work things out in January. And I think Liam Miller is a good player. I'd like to see a little bit more of him, but certainly I think, you know, you'd be looking for a little bit more going forward. I mean, they've scored the second least goals in the division. I think just 6 goals in 8 games, which is not great. They have taken the 4th most shots. So again, maybe points to kind of choices from Brophy and so on. But I think, having watched them, that in general, they're not making clear enough shots. They're maybe not kind of managing to create the opportunities for somebody at Brophy, so I don't want to land it all at his feet in terms of decision making. But anyway, yeah, really feel quite positive for them. I think the last few results have been really good. Everything that's kind of said around the club seems really good. If you had to, seeing as you love a wee bit of transfer speculation, is there a loan target you can think of in January that would kind of take them to that next level for this season? Maybe get up to 3rd or 4th.
I wish that I had a bit more time to think about that one.
I've got a couple of shouts, I guess, so, just off the top of my head, but go maybe, for it if you have him.
Maybe it's probably unlikely, but maybe they could try and make a play for Greg Docherty.
That was top name on my list. Yep. Yeah. I think not a surprise maybe to listeners that I'm trying desperately to find a way for him to get some minutes somewhere.
Hey, Greg Doherty.
but yeah, I'm a fan of Greg Doherty. I really like what he can bring for a team, and I think I'm not a fan of young players languishing on the sidelines without getting any minutes at Rangers or Celtic. So yeah, Greg Doherty, I mean, I hesitate to say his name on a podcast where we managed to get past the Scotland section without mentioning him, but there is a Chelsea connection here. So Billy Gilmore, for some creativity to that midfield, that's a possibility. Maybe somebody like Lewis Morgan, you know, as some sort of wing threat. So I think that would maybe be an option. But yeah, I think there's a lot for people to be very positive about with Kilmarnock, and perhaps there's a chance for some people who weren't so positive to say some things about how they feel now. The final thing I wanted to mention on it in terms of positivity was just a wee look at their attendances. So naturally, they, you know, tend to get a higher home attendance when Rangers or Celtic are in town. But I did note that their last kind of 3 home games this season, Hibs, Aberdeen and Ross County, have all been about the 5,000 mark. So for instance,
that's pretty good.
Attendance down by any sort of significant measure when they faced Ross County. They had 4,900 according to Wikipedia versus them, whereas 5,250 against Aberdeen. And the kind of key thing that I looked at was the game against Ross County, so 4,900. When they played Ross County about two years ago, on the 30th of September 2017, the attendance for that home was 3,337. So that to me is quite a good sign of the sort of things that can come from this, that kind of audience growth. The final thing I would leave them with is set pieces. I think that they can do a bit more with those. So if they are trying to make some more chances, and obviously maybe don't have the players till Jan to do that, I'm sure Alessio's working on it. Clearly, you know, it would maybe have been part of the training stuff that Broadfoot ran away from, literally. But if they can maybe get a little bit more from set pieces, their XG per set piece is the 5th least in the league, and their XG per set piece conceded is the 2nd highest in the league. So not great on both those things. Let's move on to some match analysis. So the first match we're going to look at tonight in our kind of final round of things to look at is Ross County 2, St Johnstone 2 from this weekend, Scottish Premiership action. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there's a couple of things that stood out in this game. I thought, first of all, both teams were very poor defensively. I think that's something from a Ross County perspective that's hindering them from maybe being a little bit further up the table.
Sure.
Because they look quite good and they've definitely got an attacking threat in Stewart and Mackay. But the defence is just too weak. I think the two centre-backs of them are just, they're not good enough for the Premiership, to be honest.
I think we spoke about that before, but also I thought they didn't have Payton and Henderson starting this game in midfield. So I was wondering, it looked to me as though they got a little bit cut through at times. Did you think any defensive issue was down to that, or do you think it's mainly centre-backs? I also thought Foster's still starting out of position. Well, maybe, I don't know if you would see it as out of position, but he's playing at left-back to accommodate Fraser, and I thought defensively there were some issues with him being at left-back in this game.
Yeah, I totally agree. Again, I wrote down at Foster, what he's better going forward than he is his actual job, absolutely. Which for a 34-year-old fullback is really weird. That was definitely one of the notes that I picked up. I think that if Ross County really want to take things further forward, they need to, you know, get some defensive reinforcements in the January window. But and they did feel pretty soft through the centre. I think Matty Kennedy looked like he had them on the ropes as soon as he ran straight at them. There was evidence a couple of times before he actually scored his goal, which was dreadful goalkeeping.
Yeah,
absolutely dreadful goalkeeping. Mm. I think that, yeah, from a St Johnstone point of view, they look very similar. They look very weak at the back, I think. And I think they lack a lot of lack of mobility in the middle of the park. That was difficult for me to say there.
Did you feel that there was good mobility evidence by Murray Davidson when he was doing that weird attempted hurdle over the player that got him a booking? That was bizarre, wasn't it? Then obviously that led to the Spittle equaliser with the free kick. That was pretty disastrous. And what about Ralston for the opener? Did you see that marking for the guy that came in, and then that attempted clearance? That was, bring back Foster.
I feel that just this full game was just full of defensive calamities, and that's what really sort of was evident in all the goals. There was something that happened in each one of them. I even thought for Spittle's free kick, as good as it was, I felt that Xander Clark's positioning was a little bit too far off to one side.
So I wouldn't disagree with that. I thought for a bit of quality, as much as he missed a penalty before it, Stevie May's goal was pretty good. I mean, he was really clear pointing as to where he wanted to receive the ball. I think it was Kennedy that played it in, actually. And then there was a nice bit of kind of turn on a move and a pretty good finish. I think you could question Fontaine, I think it was, who was supposed to be tracking him. But I thought that was quite nice. So at least, you know, some quality in a match.
That was a good goal. I think just finally on a St Johnstone point of view, their next game against St Mirren and Hamilton, those two games are huge for them.
Absolutely
huge.
So that's, I think St Johnstone are away to St Mirren next, and obviously St Johnstone are bottom on 4 points, but St Mirren are second bottom. So that's massive. St Johnstone still with no wins. We pointed out last week that, you know, we thought Tommy Wright was under a bit of pressure. You're completely right. Those two matches are absolutely massive for them. I think Ross County, so that's them in fifth now on 12 points, but they've got Celtic away next time, who will obviously be wanting to get back into the title hunt and kind of draw a clear line under the Livingston result. So that could be tough for Ross County and their centre-backs yet again too. Do you have anything further to say about that game, or do you want to move on?
Yep, let's move on.
Okay, great. So we're going to drop down a couple of divisions to League One, and we're going to talk about Raith Rovers versus Falkirk. So this match finished 2-2, which puts Raith top on 19 points. This is their first draw of the season, and it puts Falkirk third on 16 points. The game was pretty hot from the off. Falkirk scored after just 3 minutes. What were your thoughts on this game, Gavin?
So it actually brought me back. We watched the highlights of Raith Rovers earlier in the season, and we mentioned that the goalkeeper McGunn looked like he struggled with low shots, and Falkirk scored with a low shot. He made a good reaction save, but then the shot that was down into the keeper's, I think it was his left-hand side, he really struggled to get down, and it was quite evident. And I think throughout the game, you then seen Falkirk have a large number of attempts on goal. as the game went on. And I think that is something that if you wanted to hurt Wraith, that's what I would expect teams to do, is maybe just, you know, have that little bit of a potluck, low XG shot, and hope that you can get past McGunn.
He's just turned 39. I mean, it happens to you once you get up in those numbers. I'm sure it takes a little bit longer to get down to those shots at the corner. I also thought, unfortunately for that opener, that my guy Regan Hendry, who had talked up in the previous week, he didn't put a glove on the guy who was shooting. No. He was the closest person. And I think when you're on the edge of the box and the opponent that's near you is going to be pulling the trigger, you need to, you know, land something on him physically. So that was disappointing to me. What about beyond then? Anything else?
Yeah, I thought the first 45 minutes, Falkirk really dominated the game and had a lot of opportunities. Yep. Connor Salmon's goal, I thought it was a great finish, but really poor defending. And Wraith, for me, like the structures in front of the back four were just completely missing.
Do you think it was a foul?
Not really. I felt... Okay. What I did think, though, was that Wraith got a little bit too caught up in the game with decisions like that. There was watching the highlights, they looked like they were a little bit too emotional with these things that weren't going their way.
There was another one on Hendry when, they kind of made a breakaway and he got taken out in a challenge, and he was, you're right, I think he was kind of, you know, throwing his fist up in the air instead of getting up and getting on with it. Yep.
Yeah. So then, moving on from that, Wraith made a change and brought on Daniel Armstrong, who really changed the game, right? Armstrong was at Wraith previously. He then joined Ross County, where he maybe didn't get the minutes that he wanted and was subsequently released.
He's been at Wolves as well, right? He's only 21. I think he was at Wolves kind of as, his kind of latter part of his youth career. Yep. So some good experience and nice to see him making an impact. What did you think about him when he came on?
I thought the ball was always, he was always in the highlights, always in the action, always looked like he wanted to get involved, and it looked like Wraith knew that if they wanted to get something out of it, they had to give the ball to him. It was a great ball in for the goal. I thought maybe it was a little bit predictable that was going to happen, and Falkirk could have maybe got to it a little bit quicker. But it was a good ball in for him for the opening Wraith goal. Then his free kick was a little bit of quality for him, but again, I felt the keeper could have done a little bit better. It felt like he got a bit of a weak wrist to it, where if he's maybe a bit stronger to that, he keeps it out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, a good level of quality from Armstrong to be able to, you know, get that into quite a difficult zone for the keeper to try and save. So, you know, I think overall the draw felt like the right result, and I'm excited to see how these two teams go. I think they both need to get into the Championship. I think they've been, you know, Falkirk can't afford to stay down, and Wraith have been in the League One for too long.
Yeah, I'd agree with all that. Yeah, this is an interesting game. I thought Falkirk played some really good stuff in the opening half. I thought they could even have been maybe three up by halftime. I think they have a nice approach of playing these kind of direct, kind of lofted balls into Salmon, and then he kind of lays them off. They can progress up the field quite well. And I felt that, maybe Wraith were lacking a wee bit in kind of physical elements and stuff. But like you said, Armstrong was a bit of a game changer, and they did well with set pieces. Both of the goals coming from kind of right wing set pieces, which was kind of interesting. Interesting result, and keeps that a really kind of interesting competition for top of the table in League One and for promotion to the Championship. So let's drop down another level. In fact, just before we do, I should say that Wraith visit Clyde next. Clyde are in sixth, and Falkirk host Peterhead, who are in eighth. So it'll be interesting to see what shakes out of those games and where the league is in a couple of weeks. We'll come back to that, of course. We'll move down another division to League Two, and we'll have a look at Cowdenbeath versus Edinburgh City. So this is a 1-0 victory for Cowdenbeath in a clash that we're kind of looking at because both teams are near the top of the table. This puts Cowdenbeath up to second, just a point behind Cove Rangers. Edinburgh are in third at the moment. They're 2 points behind Cove. And next, I think Cowdenbeath go away to Stirling, who are bottom in 10th, and Edinburgh host Stenhouse Muir, who are just behind them in 4th. Quite a key game, really, in League Two. What were your thoughts on this game, Gavin?
So I thought that it lacked a little bit of quality, and maybe, Cowden and Beath. Yeah. I thought that Cowden and Beath looked like they wanted to play a physical game really early on. And from speaking to some people on Twitter, they said that's, you know, that's absolutely their style. They want to rough teams up and sort of bring them into that dogfight. And they absolutely succeeded with this, I felt. I think Edinburgh City, who we've watched previously, play some nice things, maybe got lured into trying to be a little bit more direct than they normally would be. I felt for the opening goal, I felt that, again, it was similar to Wraith, where I felt that Edinburgh City were slow to react and were maybe feeling too much sorry for themselves rather than playing to the whistle. Keeper was too slow off his line for me.
Absolutely, yeah. I thought the keeper was quite slow. That's Aidan McAdams, he's only 20 years on loan from Rangers, but yeah, it was a pity. Sorry, carry on though, Gavin. What else you got?
Yeah, I think again, if you watch it back, like as soon as it happens though, even the centre-back, I think it's Balotelli that's fouled, the other centre-back is appealing to the linesman, rather than trying to shuttle across to try and maybe get, you know, influence the striker's chance. And yeah, there wasn't a great deal of positives from this. Our guy Alex Harris looked like he had some nice moments in the game. I can maybe see why the Edinburgh City fans think that he maybe doesn't get involved enough. But he certainly has the quality, and I think that if Edinburgh City are going to go up, he's going to be absolutely pivotal to this. I think there was a red card obviously as well in this game. It was a red card. It's as simple as that. It was a pretty poor challenge, and again, that sort of plays into, you know, Cowden Beath dragging Edinburgh City into their game. So yeah, that was my sort of takeaways from this game. Did you see anything different?
No, I agree with your take on those. I also think that it wasn't that great a game to watch from the highlights I saw. I think maybe partly that's influenced by the kind of camera angle it's from. It's obviously a stadium that has some motorsport as well, so you kind of have a little bit of a different view of the pitch than normal. And the pitch itself is a little bit kind of heavy looking. I thought that the start of the game was kind of dominated by set pieces, and then it felt to me like Edinburgh City were actually kind of exerting a bit of an influence on the game, but they really couldn't make any clear chances. They were kind of reduced to kind of shots from the edge of the box and so on after layoffs, and then the goal was a bit mental, really. It was a bit of a strange kind of mix up for the goal, and then, like you say, just a bit of indecision and defence from centre backs and goalkeeper, well finished by the attacker. I think, I mean, he could potentially have said that it was a penalty, but he got straight up and just kind of finished it off, which was good. And then I think that after the goal, you know, the goal was on 44 minutes from Cox of Cowden Beath, and then Edinburgh City got a man sent off, Craig Thompson, who is well known for some indecent behaviour in his past. This was also relatively indecent, but of a different nature, with a very reckless challenge. Definitely a red card, like you say, but that was an injury time in the first half, and from then it was going to be very difficult, I thought, for Edinburgh City to get back into it. I thought that in the second half, Cowden Beath actually were a bit unlucky not to increase their leads. They did some quite smart things. I felt they were kind of varying their play, played some things wide, also kind of knocked things over the top, which was quite good. Obviously, playing against 10 men and particularly a fullback that's been sent off, there was some opportunities to kind of try and do that. So, yeah, a really, really big result for Cowden Beath. You could kind of hear that from the crowd at the end. This is massive for them in terms of their promotion prospects, even this early in the season, puts them up just behind Cove. So well done to them. And similarly to the other games, we'll come back to those teams in a couple of weeks and can have a wee look at where they are. That is kind of everything for today's episode of the Pure Football Podcast. This is our 38th episode, I believe. Just want to thank anybody who is listening for listening. Please do subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Tell a friend. Also, contact us on Twitter. It was really nice to get some kind of feedback when we reached out about talking about Kilmarnock this evening to hear from a couple of listeners about either things they wanted to hear about or just their kind of suggestions and their feelings on our clubs. Always love to hear that kind of stuff from you. Gavin, do you have anything you want to kind of say to listeners before we go?
No, just thank you so much. The sort of growth in numbers over the last sort of wee while has been great. And I'm really happy that people are enjoying what we're doing. And as long as we do, we'll continue to do it.
Great. Hope you all enjoy the international break and that Scotland do manage to get maximum point totals from Russia, San Marino and all the under-19 and under-21 games that we're playing. And thanks again for listening. Goodbye.